Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show, The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy Wallace. I host the show, and today I have, of course, another great guest. Her name is Linda, and I'm going to bring Linda on, and Linda's going to tell us a little bit about her story that started her on her journey, and then we'll ask a couple questions, and we'll just keep her talking for the entire hour. So, Linda, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nancy.
So, Linda, how are you today?
I'm very good. I had a nice weekend with friends, and I'm looking forward to talking to you and your viewers.
Great. So, Linda, tell us a little bit about yourself and what kind of started you on your journey, how you worked up to it, because you have kind of a neat story here. So could you tell our listeners how it goes?
Sure. I've been interested in, metaphysics and our belief system and all that good stuff for, consciously since I was in my 20s, I've had some very intuitive moments where I can remember as far back as maybe when I was 5 or 6. And these intuitive moments were like, just like flashes, like, mm-hmm. like more than brief thoughts, but something like, Linda, you should pay attention to this. And I didn't always pay attention to it, but when I began being a little bit more aware of those messages, my life started flowing a little bit easier, you might say. But I had to get over a few things in my life. There were things holding me back. None of us have perfect parenting or programming, and so I had to release some of that I was carrying around. And I met a wonderful instructor out on the East Coast, and I did some self-mastery work, is what he calls it, for about 9 to 12 months before I entered his certification process as a holistic counselor and holistic life coach and spiritual counselor.
Okay.
And as I went through that process, I wanted to quit many times. My ego was saying, I don't like how this feels. So I remember one time saying, I think I'll take a break from this for a while. He says, oh, you mean like you were going to do 6 weeks ago? And I laughed and I said, how'd you know that? But having worked with people in this field, he knew that I guess I was giving off some pretty strong signals there. I've been in a lot of different areas. Arenas in life in terms of jobs and things of that nature. And and experienced times of no work as well. And like peeling the layers of the onion, I think I had to experience that in order to really go for what I've wanted to do and what I believe and feel is my life's path. We get that proverbial little nudge on the shoulder or a little tap or a little, hey, what are you doing with your life? I always said that I had to get hit over the head to get it, and I kind of did get hit over the head. When I was 50 years old, I was, just before my 50th birthday, I was diagnosed with a, thankfully, a benign brain tumor. And it was life-altering, naturally.
Very life-altering.
Yeah, it was. First of all, I had this thing going on inside me saying, oh, well, my mom died when I was 10 and my dad died 4 years later, so this is just history is going to repeat itself. I'm not going to be here for my kids, so I was scared to death about that, just plain scared to death. And but again, you keep it together. Your ego mind says, be strong, just do it. You can do this. And, of course, 3 months later after the surgery, I did go through a clinical depression, which wasn't too surprising. Learned through that that, you know, you can get through that, and there are people there to help you with that as well. It really was the beginning. It was saying, you're not doing what your natural strengths, gifts, and talents are. And it even took me a little longer to manifest that. After I had that tumor, I was teaching at the time, and I wasn't ready to go back. I had thought about massage therapy, but I wanted to be with people more than just on a solo basis. So, again, and this is probably where my programming came in. It was very unconscious on my part. I went into real estate, but I was passionate about finding people the right house, you know, and having them be happy in that. My mother was never happy in her house, and I think I carried a lot of that with me in just the few short 10 years that she was around.
Can I ask you a question, Linda?
Oh, sure, please do.
What you're talking about, do you think that a lot of people tend to believe, number one, because maybe a parent was sick and died because of whatever reason or at an early age, that a lot of people really do put that fear into their mind?
Oh, like I did? You mean like my parents
right.
died, so I, yeah. I don't know if it's that so much as you just have a fear that something catastrophic is going to upset the, you know, the family apple cart here. I never had that feeling prior to this. I think it was the timing, because my kids were about 5 and 8. No, let's see, they're about 5 and 8. I think what people carry around with them is just the basic fear that of abandonment or someone leaving, that they're not going to fulfill their duties as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people who have had both parents perish like that, although you hear it in the news so much lately, a lot.
When I do readings for people, not a lot of them, but some of them, well, ask me the question about their health, and my question back to them is, why are you asking about your health? Because I want to kind of know where their mind is set at, because if I'm going to come up with something that's not so good, I want to know what they know. So the majority of time when people ask me that, and I ask the question back, why do you worry, they come up with the usual answer of, well, my mom had breast cancer and died at a very early age, or my dad had a heart attack, or, you know, kind of runs in our family, and I'm just a little concerned about that. So that's why I was kind of asking that question, because, you know, as a reader, I do run into that a lot, and I was just kind of like looking to see what thought you had with that.
Well, you know, now that you mention it, my children's father, my ex-husband, died in January, and I'm going to pursue this with them a little bit, of course, after they get through at least a year of the grieving process, to see if they have any residual effects from that.
Probably important, you know, to see if that's maybe there, because as a holistic life coach, I'm sure you'd be able to, you know, tell them a few things or at least try to get them to talk about it enough so that they understand that it doesn't necessarily have to mean it's going to be the same way for them.
For them, right. Well, you know what it is? It's back to your original question. We live so much about our body. You know, most of us, I mean, until I transcended a lot of the grief and just all of my ego defense mechanisms that was keeping me safe, sane, and secure in my little world, but it wasn't getting me anywhere because I wasn't taking challenges or risks in my life. Once you get past the fact that, you know, we're spiritual beings in this body, and if you are of the belief that we will go on and we will come back, and then it's not so scary. But we're, I mean, consider how we are. We're blasted with the TV and mm-hmm. with commercials. You know, about our body. It's not about how to take care of our body, except right. you know, put another layer of makeup on or something. In fact, I went to a show recently, and now they're having commercials about, you know, underwear and stuff at the show before the actual movie comes on. I'm going, oh my goodness. So, and yeah, naturally we all want to look good, our best. And, but when you really get down to it, it's taking care of the vehicle that we came in. I liken it to a bicycle built for two. You know, the bicycle is our vehicle. It's our body. And it gets us around in life. But if we keep, what are we going to put in the front seat? Are we going to have our ego drive us or our spirit? And I met a lady about 2-3 years ago, got to know her rather well, and learned that she had had some, oh gosh, I'm not even sure what, I want to call it a stent or something she had put in her so that she, I don't know, would metabolize fat faster or something. I'm not even sure that I'm saying that correctly. But, and I remember when she told me, I just thought, my goodness, the extent that people will go. And I guess maybe that's what some Hollywood stars do. I don't look for that, and I certainly don't have that kind of money to put into me. But so back to the bicycle bill for two. If we, you know, I put my ego in the front seat, and that's when I say that I mean that I lived in fear a lot. I did life hard for a long time. And there's still times, of course, I catch myself. But in fact, one of the exercises that we had to do through the Holistic Learning Center that I had been certified with was to come up with first of all, we had to do a lot of work on ourselves and figure out what our thoughts were, which became our beliefs, which manifested into whole belief systems, and then what our identities were. And I realized that many of my identities were fear-based, and many of them, of course, were based on the parenting and programming that I had. And I'll share it with you. We came up with letters, acronym. My acronym for myself was APOPDHL. So I was a abandoned, persecuted, orphaned princess doing life hard. So what that translated into was I was abandoned, of course, because my parents died. I was persecuted because I had to go live with someone else, and I, you know, couldn't live in my house that I grew up in. I was orphaned, so to speak. I was a princess because my dad, I was just the apple of his eye. And DLH was doing life hard. For some reason, I thought you had to, if you didn't struggle, then you weren't going to get anywhere in life. And, of course, struggling, effort is fine, but struggling is effort laced with negative emotions, and that's what I was doing for a large part of my life. I teach in seminars and workshops and in my coaching, I teach this four-step ladder series of how we live our life. And the lowest rung of the ladder is fear. Now, in and of itself, fear isn't a, you know, I mean, if you are being chased by a mad dog, it's perfectly appropriate to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're living your life out of fear, meaning that the jobs you choose, the relationships, the people you have in your life, the things you look for are all fear-based, you know, you're going to be just a wreck. The second step of the ladder I think of as duty. Now, that's not a bad thing either. I mean, thank God we have dutiful people over in our armed services, and we have friends and family that are dutiful. But if that's how you run your life, you're going to run it for other people, and you're not going to run it for yourself. And then the next one is achievement. And that's, well, what's wrong with that? That's pretty cool. But that's where I got stuck. I did things, yes, out of fear, out of duty. But I always was trying to live up to everybody else's expectations based on the parenting that I had. And Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, The Four Agreements, says, you know, just take the one agreement and do your best. You don't have to do it for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Do what comes naturally to you. But then isn't that what life is all about, in finding what you are good at and how you can apply it practically in your life? The final rung of the ladder is authenticity. And that's where, back to the bicycle built for two, when you're coming from your authentic self, you are coming from your true spirit. And there's such a difference in the way you feel when you're riding your bike or you're leading your life, so to speak, out of authenticity and not from any of the other three that I had mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people, Linda, have a hard time getting through those steps. First of all, I don't know if a lot of people know what those steps are. They're all important. They're all very good. They all need to be completed in order to get to the last step of the real self. How's that? You know?
Yeah, there you go.
But the thing is that a lot of people get stuck on certain little things along the way. You know, like you said, wanting to live your life for everybody else, you got to make sure everybody else is okay. And really, the day that somebody decides to say no to somebody else and yes to themselves, they're actually a step above, and they're going to get there a lot quicker, is usually
right.
How I look at it. Now, you have a title of holistic life coach. Can you explain to the listeners what that is?
Oh, sure. A holistic life coach looks, first of all, there's a distinct difference between that and, say, a psychologist or psychiatrist. We are not that. What a life coach does is to work with people to master aspects of their life. Psychologists, psychiatrists help people who have, I say mental illness, but that's a broad category. I mean, you can be slightly depressed, and our medical system puts everything into a lot of diagnosis into as a broad category of mental illness. So there's a distinction right there. As a holistic life coach, I look at the person as a whole being, that is the mind, the body, and the spirit. We have like I said, this vehicle, our body, to get through life. And this is the package we come in. And sometimes that is an issue for us. There is the ego mind, which can keep us in confusion or keep us addicted to excitement, drama. Its energy source is fear. The ego mind will protect us. It's like the skin of our soul, like our skin is the protective agent of our body. So it's an integration of the mind, the ego mind, the body, and the spirit. So it's to bring together that which we think, because I don't know who originally said it, but human beings don't tap, but not even 10% of the possibilities of the mind. And I truly believe that the mind then has a way of creating illnesses or dis-ease, which I'm sure you know the definition of dis-ease. You know, it's the mind and the body and the spirit not coming together. There's something not at ease. And the body never lies. It'll show up in the body. Something will manifest in the body before we are even conscious of it. And then the spiritual part is, of course, finding out what your soul, S-O-U-L, purpose in life is. There is a solution for every problem, and a spiritual one at that. I integrate visualizations, meditations, I'll start my coaching with a meditation, a visual guided imagery kind of meditation, so that will help the client lower their defenses, and they can they're a little more relaxed, they're breathing better, and what they have to say will flow a lot easier than in not doing it. Something, a lot of my workshops I'll begin with, we have everything we need. We have breath to oxygenate our tissues, our cells, tissues, organs, etc. And we have breathing to de-stress ourselves. I mean, it's a natural de-stressor. We have water to cleanse ourselves both inside and out. We have animals who can be there for us in time of need. I just coached two people over the weekend, and one was very attached to her cat, and I've had other people who say that their animals have kept them from having, certain awful things happen to them. We have plants that give us not only beauty, but they're there for medicinal purposes as well, such as aloe and what's the purple one? I can't think. A little tired today. It'll come back. So we have all these things that are natural to our body, to our life, and to our planet. And, of course, man has kind of screwed things up along the way, so we have to clean our water systems and clean the air that we're breathing and so forth. But, I think we're getting there. At least we're on a better track than we were 30 years ago. But we have everything we need, and if we would just use it for its greater good, that will help us become a more spiritual person, letting go of our ego defense mechanisms, and then we won't build up these toxins. Toxic thoughts become toxic beliefs, and they have to manifest somewhere, so it becomes diseases or maladies of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So in a roundabout way, if that answers your question about how I integrate the mind, body, and spirit.
Okay, you also have a company. It's called The Ripple Effect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Well, right now, it would be either my email or my phone or my P.O. box. I'm looking into building a website. I have a lady who's rather good at it. Actually, I have some ideas on the plate. It would be Ripple Effect Presentations. And did you want that information?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I think you should give it up.
Okay. Sure. If you wanted to write me, it would be P.O. Box 1121, Orland Park. That's Orland Park, two words, Illinois, 60462. And by email, it would be Ripple Effect, one word, so RIPPLEEFFECT, and then the number 10, at comcast.net. And then my phone number is 708-253-5600.
Okay, and if somebody wanted to make an appointment to come and see you, Linda, about how long does the appointment take?
An initial appointment for coaching?
Mm-hmm.
My coaching is generally done on the phone. I have had some people who wanted to meet me, and I have done that. And the initial appointment would be an hour to an hour and a half, depending on how much we chatted, to get some background information. But each coaching session is an hour.
Okay. And how now do they need to come more than one time? I mean, is there like a series of sessions that the person would do?
Sure. Yeah, there absolutely is. It depends on what they're looking for, looking to do. I'm not a business coach, so I don't coach people on, on their jobs or, mm-hmm. I coach them on the human aspects of their jobs, but this coaching is actually, it could be a couple of months long to, it could be a year long if a person was so invested to mm-hmm. doing it that long. It takes a little bit of emotional courage to want to do the work. So, but certainly to get past some hurdles in their life, I can present certain concepts. I can do it two ways. I can present the concepts, and then we can apply it to their life to see how they can use these concepts. That would probably be the shorter route. And then the longer route, like I said, would be to really get very deep with some emotional inner child work, because it's the thing behind the thing behind the thing. We get stuck in life, either in our personal life or our professional life, because basically out of some kind of fear that we have of moving forward. And to unblock that takes a little time. But in order to present it in a shorter version, I would do concepts, and then we would apply it to what's going on in their life. So really, it's up to the individual how much time they want to put into it. You figure this is probably the most important work you'll ever do in your life. Mm-hmm. Because once you get this flowing, you're getting your whole life flowing and everything starts falling into place.
So this wouldn't necessarily be what they consider a quick fix.
Oh, no.
It does take time and it does take work.
Yep. It takes a commitment on that part of that person to see it, you know, to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like going to traditional school. So we experience the concepts, the work, there's a lot of different processes you can go through in order to get some breakthroughs.
Okay.
And then you have to internalize it in order to emotionalize it. Because it's only in feeling, raising some of those feelings that you've let go unconsciously or consciously in your life, that you'll be able to become more aware of, oh, that's what I've been doing. I do this thing called the unconscious process, and it's... Go ahead.
No, I was just laughing with you.
Oh, okay. It's really quite funny because I'll do this in individuals or with groups, and they need to read something, and then I ask them a couple of questions about it, and they'll give me, 9 out of 10 times, people give me the same answers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll probe a little bit more, and then I'll give them the answer, and they go, oh, there it is. And so, you know, we make then an analogy of, here it is in black and white right in front of you, and you didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that happens in our life. We've been buying into all these thoughts and beliefs and belief systems, and they've become our identities, and we've been walking around with all this, and it's not getting us anywhere. You know, our way of being, it's just not getting us where we want to be. Until finally, when you do a simple exercise, and they see that, oh my gosh, it was right there and I didn't see it, then it's like a tangible for them. It's saying, oh, this is what you mean by I've got all these beliefs about myself that aren't really necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
I go, yep.
Do you work with children?
I don't. I have worked with children in the past. I'm a former teacher. I taught at some pretty tough schools. They were alternative schools or at-risk schools. That was before I got involved with this work, but I could take these ideas, and actually I've done this. I went to 2 different life coaching schools, and after one of them, I was still after going to one of the schools, I was still teaching, and I applied some of the concepts. The Wheel of Life is a typical and a very standard coaching tool. And, you know, it's a circle divided into wedges with about 8 or 9 areas of our life. And what I did with that was took it and I put it on the floor in with tape or string, and I had different categories that would be more appropriate for kids, especially like these were junior high kids. And then I would ask them very pointed questions about their life, and they would jump from wedge to wedge depending on what the answer was. But to answer your question, do I work with children individually? No, I do not.
Do you think that if we are our holistic world here that we are in, if we started working with children at a younger age, that they would not necessarily go through the same experiences or the same kind of needing to relearn everything than if they were not worked with to begin with?
And the answer to that is absolutely. My instructor, Hugh Del Conzo, has used this work with his own children. He's used the healing feeling chart that is very similar to what John Gray had come up with, and how if we feel our actual feelings instead of suppressing them or minimizing them or disassociating with them and going into an emotional block, let's say anger. Perfect example, because go in your car and get on the road, and how much road rage do we see? So if we would just, or in the office, if we would just say to ourselves, oh my gosh, I am so angry about this or that. I'm so angry with that person. Not that person makes me angry, but really take ownership of it. If we did that, and then of course, especially with anger, you have to be appropriate and go to the right person at the right time and with the right amount of intensity. If we did that, we wouldn't go into the emotional block of blame. But what do? We don't want to. We are taught not to feel angry. I mean, I was taught as a young Catholic girl, you know, be nice. Don't get upset. So in essence, you're not feeling your real healing feelings. And that's what I was getting at when I said we have everything we need, including our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Our feelings are there to help us heal. But we're so programmed not to feel them that we go into what is called an emotional block. And if we, in fact, I'm doing a presentation for Holistic Moms out this way in July, and I kind of fancied up the title about how to be the quintessential parent, but it's what it's mainly going to be about is it's going to be about self-parenting, how to nurture yourself even though you may not have gotten the best parenting in the world, and it's also going to be about ownership of feelings. So if we've actually feel the sadness, for example, and this is a tough one. My children are, they're experiencing the death of their dad in January, and they need to, and I'm very proud of them. They're doing a very good job of appropriately feeling the sadness. So they're not going into depression. Another one is feeling fear. Just feeling the fear rather than, and using it as a warning that, because our feelings are really just, it's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And fear stimulates our adrenals to fight or take flight. But if we block that or resist our natural feelings of fear, we will get overwhelmed and we'll get anxious. And in fact, I had to do what was called a dharmic thesis for my holistic work as a life coach. And I called it Something Happened on the Way to My Life. And in it, it was about how things were rolling along in my life, and then boom, something happened. Well, that something was my mom died. She did die of breast cancer. I saw her sitting there emaciated and, you know, just in a lot of pain. And what I learned was how to depress. I actually learned how to be depressed just in that experience. So life is going along again for the next 4 or 5 years, and boom, my father died. And that was another intuitive moment I got, actually. I knew that there was something the day it happened. There was this flash of, I can't explain it except that the message was for me from school, and instant fear rose up in myself. But again, going back to what did I learn, I didn't feel the sadness. I didn't feel the fear of, oh no, what am I going to do now? I went straight into anxiety. I remember walking down my high school hallway and actually putting one foot in front of me thinking, is the floor going to be there? That's how much I, here, using ego defense mechanisms to keep me safe, so to speak, I went into anxiety instead. Learned about a lot about that, too, through William Glasser's theory of choice theory, where we can, he was working, he's a psychologist or psychiatrist, he was working with an individual, and he wasn't having much success in trying to get this person to, you know, break through and apply his theory of, you know, you're choosing to depress here or whatever it was. And so he said to him, he says, well, for the purposes of our session today, would you choose not to, I don't know if it was depressed or anxietized, or he always took it in the noun, depression, and made it a verb. And so his patient said, sure, I can try to do that. And sure enough, the guy did it. So for that session, he chose not to anxietize or whatever it was. Now I don't remember, you know, whether the man was able to keep that. But the point is that we do have a lot of choice about what we think and how we feel. And it's just getting to that point of mastery where we can learn that we have more control of that than, you know, our mind does,
mm-hmm.
because of our thoughts.
You also have a favorite quote. Would you like to tell the listeners what it is?
Yeah, I do. It's funny you ask that because I was writing them down today. And I wrote two down. I thought, which is my more favorite? But I think the one about people, how does it go? People don't change until the pain of remaining the same gets too great. And then a lot of times, is that the one that I, And then sometimes after that, if I put it on a business card, I'll say, you know, how's the pain level? Or I'll just throw that out in a workshop, because we as human beings, so often we need that nudge, and we're going to go along and go along with things until, man, what was that movie where the guy opens the window and says, I'm so angry and I'm not going to take it anymore, or something like that. Until pain can be, you know, we'll move away from pain before we will go towards pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strong motivator. But the trick is, let's not get to that point. Let's see some of the signs of how our life maybe isn't working for us before we have to get to that, to where the pain is.
The definition of insanity is to keep doing something over and over again and expecting a change.
Exactly. You know,
and I think a lot of people find themselves in that kind of a mindset, mostly because I don't think they want to take responsibility to try to make some form of a change, because people do get too comfortable with where they are at the moment. And until, like your quote says, it gets too uncomfortable, they really aren't going to make a change. And I think people, if they would start to recognize, like you just said, that they could make a change before they got that far, it would be very helpful for that person to understand that life does not have to be such a burden as what they're making it to be.
Yep, it doesn't have to be the struggle. And if you would have told me that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I would have thought you were blasphemous. You know, it's like, well, of course you have to struggle. Of course life has to be, you're going to have, of course, and yeah, we're going to have pain in our life. But we don't have to get to the point that, like you said, the lessons are coming back, you know, and that's the thing, too. People think of, oh, my God, I did it again, you know, mistake, another mistake. Think of it like, get curious about your life and say, okay, that's happened before. Perfect example, I was in a relationship with a gentleman after many years after my divorce, and I noticed that I was having this feeling of I feel sorry for you. I'm going, where's this coming from? You know, and it was the same feeling that I had in my relationship with my husband at first, too. But, of course, then I was totally unconscious about it. But I noticed it. I got curious about, I'm feeling this again. Gee, I really like this guy, so I'm just going to pay attention to it. And this is where it's, you know, like the Scottish psychologist says, it's a ting behind a ting behind a ting. Well, it wasn't the gentleman I was in a relationship with. It wasn't my husband. It was rooted in, I felt sorry for my dad, because after my mom died, that's when I conjured up this idea of I feel sorry for you. And I thought, okay, I don't have to do this. First of all, it's not healthy. It's not healthy to be in a relationship that you feel sorry for somebody. But I couldn't understand why it was, you know, it was so evident and early on in the relationship with this man. And I thought, you know what, that's what it was. And so those lessons, I realized that I could make a choice here, and I didn't have to go through that feeling of feeling sorry for this man, and of course it wouldn't have been a healthy relationship if I had.
A lot of people, Linda, tend to stay in unhealthy relationships for several reasons. What I think the most important reason is, because at least what I get when I'm doing readings from what people tell me, is that they're afraid to make a change because they really don't want to be alone, or they don't know anything else. And
right.
I have to look at that person, and I ask them, is it worth your health? And they usually look at me like, what? And I go, do you realize that if you're not going to make yourself happy and you continue to stay in places, that it only is going to bring you down, depress you, or make you feel bad, that eventually that toll is going to be taken on your body, and your body will fight back by making you sick because of the disease. And they look at me and they go, what do you mean? I go, well, it's not really, say, disease. Let's say diseasement. As you said earlier, I think people have a hard time choosing responsibility for themselves to say no and allow themselves to be happy by saying yes.
Yeah.
And I think it is very much inbred in people because of they've seen their parents grow up like that, or they've been told several times over, oh, you don't want to end up alone, so just adjust to it, it'll work out. And then instead of adjusting to it, people start to lock it away inside themselves, which only, in my opinion, is like locking away a magnet, which means that you're going to continue to draw that same energy to you over and over again until you either get sick or you finally take the responsibility to be happy. Because, see, nobody, in my opinion, is going to make you happy until you yourself can look in that mirror and let yourself be happy and love who you are. I don't know if people today understand that loving themselves, not ego-wise, but loving who they are inside them is really the best gift that they could give to themselves.
I hope...
And until they, go ahead.
And I really... I'm sorry, were you finished?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to say, like, bingo. What you said, I look at that, too, Nancy, as a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
I look at my parents who were great avoiders. Now, they loved each other, and my parents actually would be 100 years old right now. Because my mom had me when she was 43. I'm 57, so. But they avoided. In fact, they did not tell my brother, who lived in Minnesota at the time, that she was sick with breast cancer until she actually died from it. That's how much they avoided issues. Now there's me, a different generation, but I have siblings who are 8 years older, and he and I are in a lot of agreement about how our thoughts create our beliefs and our conditions. But my other three brothers and sisters were born in the Depression era, and they're still avoiding issues because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or whatever their case may be. I see my children, who are 24 and 20, going to be 27, they are like, they've taken the bull by the horns, just naturally. Mm-hmm. They are much truer to themselves. So I think we are evolving as, and certainly not everybody, but as a society, as a... globally, we are evolving. We're taking on less junk.
Yeah, and I think that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, and I think these new kids coming in are really going to be much further ahead of the game than we ever thought we could be. But you know what? I have to stop you, Linda, because our time is just about up, and I would like you to give out the information for people to get a hold of you again before we run out of time.
Oh, sure. Just a moment, please. Did you want me to go ahead with that?
Oh, please, yeah.
Okay. Again, my company is Ripple Effect Presentations, and I do individual coaching, life coaching and spiritual counseling, and I do workshops and seminars. And you can get a hold of me at Ripple Effect, that's one word, RIPPLE. EFFECT 10 at Comcast.net, or call me at 708-253-5600. And if you'd like to write to me, it's P.O. Box 1121, Orland Park, Illinois 60462.
Linda, it's been great having you on the show. I'd like to thank you for being on the show. And, I wish you the best luck with everything you got yourself going, and I know it'll turn out well. And, of course, I'd like to thank you, the listeners. Please take another listen next week. I will be back. If you'd like to get a hold of me, my number is 630-941-6816. May God bless all of you. Take care and have a great week. Bye now.
do, God.